Welcome to Listen In. I'm Brian Gahan, and this podcast focuses on the stories that are buried deep inside all conversations. Be it the kind of conversation you have with someone whose life experience is full of interesting POVs and insights, or the kind of conversation you have inside your own head around your own life experiences. Today, in episode 26, I'm talking with musician, songwriter, and frontman for the Honey Runners, Dan Dwoskin. Dan takes us on a journey through his creative process, how fatherhood benefits his songwriting, and the significance of being the proverbial mirror for an audience. His band's latest album, Everything Is On Fire, can be found on Spotify and is being played on radio stations around the world. Hey, Dan, welcome to Listen In.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. I love talking to artists who create the art from a perspective that I have no idea how they do it. So as a songwriter, performer, musician, tell me a little bit about your process and how you started to become a songwriter. Like when you started to realize, oh, no, I'm a songwriter, as opposed to, let's say, a musician who's going to perform other people's songs.
When I was a kid growing up, I had car rides to school with my dad. And my dad, we would be listening to something and he would talk over the song, which infuriated me. But he was always like, listen to what, you know, Neil Young, Bob Dylan, Paul Simon, listen to this lyric, listen to this. Isn't that genius? Crosses in the ballpark. Wait, what does that mean? It's a great, it's a great lyric. And I'd be like, just let me listen to the song. But I started to realize that the poetry behind it. And I realized that what my dad loved about music is that he could hear the words very clearly, which is why I listened to a lot of folk and a lot of stuff that like really resonated with him more on a poetry level. And so to me, the poetry became very important.
Sorry, that's fine. Like the cat meowing.
That's Janis Joplin. So just in case you hear that during this interview.
Oh, we're going to hear her. Well, you know, the thing that I always tell everybody is I say, no matter what happens on a podcast, is you can preamble it in the introduction. So you can go, hey, you might notice that the audio, you know, or the if you're doing it over the internet caved or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So now I can go, there's going to be Janis Joplin's going to be around.
Otis Redding is quiet, which is strange.
Oh, so cool.
But getting back to you, so your question of how did you start with knowing that you were a songwriter as opposed to doing other people's material, basically being a cover band. So after kind of getting taught about the poetry of lyricism from my mom and dad, I kind of started learning about bands like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones that started as cover bands that then realized there was actually more money in writing their own songs and just more freedom. It always blew my mind when I watched a performer play something. I guess I always assumed that they all wrote their own songs. Until one day you'd see the writing credits and you'd be like, this song was written by 8 people.
Right.
And so it was strange to me that someone could perform a song that wasn't their own. Like, how do you feel that way? And so it's a long answer just because the origins of it come from different places. I also loved English class. I loved Shakespeare. I loved that you could say something that has so many levels to it, and that, you know, you could prey on the intellectual people and the simpler minds, and you could insult somebody without them knowing it, which was what Shakespeare was great at.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you could insult a king in his own castle and he loved you for it, and because he didn't even realize that you were. It's the same thing in politics, you know.
Yeah.
Be sitting with who was it? Someone, I think it was Bush, used Springsteen's song as like an anthem born in the USA.
Right.
And that song is like an insult to the US and what it means to be an American, because he felt like it's not a great thing to be born in the USA anymore.
Right.
But because he's this American hero. And so his ability to use lyricism and poetry to get one over onto them, it's incredible. So really, it's just cheeky. I love being able to really speak my mind in a way that people don't necessarily find insulting, but it is a certain amount of irony and cheekiness in there and putting your ideas across.
Mm-hmm.
And poetry's good for that.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you say is you had a love for language and a love for music, which then, you know, you can't do one without the other. You know, you couldn't just go up and be a musician and play somebody else's language. I mean, you can, but you didn't enjoy it and you didn't probably feel fulfilled until it was your language that you were singing.
Yes and no. I love, like, I could sit at a piano all day and play cover songs of other people's stuff, because I find I get a kick out of trying to put myself in the place of where they were when they wrote it. Because when you read someone else's lyrics and you play someone else's songs, I mean, that's how we all grew up and learned music, by playing other people's stuff. Right. There's a departure point at which you're like, okay, it's time to lay down how I'm feeling.
So tell me about that. When was that departure point for you? Do you have a memory of that? An age?
Yeah.
A song?
Yeah, it was about power.
Okay.
It was about, I grew up with very low self-esteem, because I wasn't a popular kid. I was kind of a weird kid. It takes a certain amount of weirdness to be a musician. You have to spend a lot of time alone honing your craft. And so you are a lone wolf, and music had a certain amount of power when it came to social circles. And I didn't have a British accent. I wasn't great looking, you know, and so for me, music was something I could tap into to connect with people the way, with the ease of which it comes from someone who is attractive or someone who's funny, or, you know, there's, so I saw music as having a power. Obviously, as I grew up, there was a lot more to it than that, but, girls, it started,
yeah, it starts
like
with
it
girl.
Always does. It, like, if I'm gonna be honest, right? There were girls that I fell for that I wanted to write songs about. There was relationships I wanted to write songs about. I mean, my first song that I consider, it was called Fall for You. I have recordings of it. I could play you some.
Okay, that's great. Well, you know what? If we get it, we'll put it in here.
To the wall, waiting for my next window, when you're so far out of my reach, cause my life out here says don't go. Can't count the paths that you could have taken, cause you miss all the ones ahead. Learn from mistakes that you've been making, there's plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. Smile for me, stole a glance, now I'm guilty, wanna know your name. You could be the last piece missing from this perfect game.
Fall for You. So this is of a girl. How old are you?
15.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're 15, and it's about a girl, and you write a song. Do you remember how it made you feel?
I wrote the song and I recorded it myself, and I remember thinking, great, like I've done a full song and it's mine. And I didn't like really perform it or anything. Like I crafted this song and I wanted to play it for the girl, but I never did.
Oh.
And I never sent it to her. I never showed her the lyrics. It was like a journal.
Right.
It was just like writing something that I knew was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember I would think to myself, like, wow, if only she heard this, we would be together.
Yeah.
Right?
She'd know.
Like, yeah.
She would know. Sounds more like a movie to me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So tell me, you know, now, you know, fast forward X number of years, what do you use, the word that comes to mind is like your muse, right? Like what's your muse? Like, how do you get, tapped into the next creative, birth of a song? Does it start with something, a sound in your head? Does it start with a image? Does it start with a lyric, the word? How does that work for you?
I think it's a little different every time, but there's always a grain of similarity to it. And you'll find that answered. That's very similar for a lot of songwriters. It's this idea of like tapping into the ether, right? Where it and I think it's the same beyond songwriting. It's the same for writing and for painting and for photography. I'm somewhat of a serial joy chaser, and I love to watch things happen. And I find that a lot of things, I just collect these little moments that I find funny or sad or beautiful, and I stash them in the back of my brain. And then I find later down the road, if I'm feeling a certain way, that moment tends to float back to me in a very photographic way, right? A snapshot of that particular moment that deserved to be written about. And then the song's born. But it's kind of like a big bang in a way of like, that, you have to experience that moment. Then you have to tap into this, like this ether. Then you have to feel that way. And then you have to have kind of music that floats in that realm. And then
it comes together.
You smash it all together. And suddenly a song's born. And it's like a pretty, it's a very spiritual experience that I think has been degraded over time by a lot of people. But I think there's an incredible, I feel like it has to be African. There was a tradition that everyone was born with a song, their own like heart song kind of a thing.
Right.
And that you kind of, that your tribe would sing this song like as you were in the womb. And when you were born, that song was like, became your thing. I don't know if I'm telling this right at all.
No, it doesn't matter. It's a beautiful story,
So what's intriguing to me about that is that I feel that. I feel like there are things that grab me much more than other things. And obviously, with time, that changes. Just like your love of certain genres of music or books or movies changes over time. And with that, I feel like the heart songs come out differently. So you chase different things at different times.
Oh, wow.
And as long as you can tap into that, then the magic's there. The song's is great. Because my big thing with songwriting is like, just get out of the way of it. Let it be born, right? Let that big bang happen. Otherwise, see you later. the idea has gone out the window.
So you've given me so much here to sort of like, comment on. So let me just say that I thought that was beautiful the way you described it. Serial joy chaser. I think I want that on a t-shirt. Like, that's a great way of describing somebody. But yeah, the way that you described tapping into that experience at a later date is exactly how I feel the song off of Everything's on Fire, Honeymoon does for me. Meaning, like, when I listen to that song, I am going through the woods with you. Like, it's so, like, whatever you've done, you've caught me with that emotion and the feeling of what you were describing in that song. And the first time I heard that song, I was just like, whoa, I am like right there with you in that car driving through the woods.
Call me if you need me. Call me if you need me, my love. 'Cause it feels like you've been away too long. Oh, and I know that you stole my song. And I know that you know it was wrong.
To hear you describe that's your process or how your muse, I think I asked you the question was about a muse, and you describe that to me, it's like it just feels like a total alignment, like, oh, I get it now. And that's so powerful. Like, it, you know, because a lot of people will, like, they'll write notes, you know, a lot of people will journal. But it's interesting how it sounds like you've almost married like a visual and an emotional way of journaling to your songwriting.
Yeah. I'll show you a journal after. I've got, I had books and books and books of these kind of like moleskin style things. And like, but I love writing things down. I love to scratch things out,
right,
and trim the fat. And it's cool to go back and see how these things were born,
mm-hmm.
or like even like what you chose to write about, because sometimes you do have a melody first and a song and you're like, wow, these beautiful chords,
right?
What do I do with this? Like Those Eyes off the album, the Honey Runners old guitar player, the original guitar player for the Honey Runners for 10 years, 7 years maybe. Marcus Bucci wrote the music for that. And the music was so nice. I remember he brought it to me one night and showed it to me. And he was never like the kind of guy to ask me to write for something he'd written. He's very
right.
Shy about it almost. But it just nailed me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to really create a good song for this, these lyrics. And floated for a long time trying to find a story that was as good as the music was.
Right. So that brings up a good point. So do you always start with a melody? And
no.
then you go into that memory space to have the emotion and the word and the language come out? Or
no. Like I said, it's different every single time. Songwriting is the Wild West. There's no rules.
Right.
There's no box. Trying to write a pop song, yes, there's a box.
Right, right.
But you don't have to adhere to any of this. Just like a good poet. Like,
right.
You don't even have to. There's even the structure of what goes on a piece of paper is different now. You could do whatever you want.
Right.
It's more, yes, like it depends on your audience. It depends on what you're going to do with this, but there's no rules. And so when the spark or the muse or the other floats in, it's more than anything. It's about being sensitive enough and in tune enough with what's happening to like let that flow through you and use your craft to lay it down.
Right.
That's your job as an artist, is to take these moments in time that you see through your own life's perspective and try to translate that to someone so that they can either put themselves in your shoes when you experience that moment, like driving through the forest,
right,
or help bring a memory back to them from their own life.
Right.
that's kind of, I find, the twofold way of,
that's cool,
of, yeah, a good story.
So have you had that, you know, moment where somebody's come up to you and said, oh my God, you know, whatever their experience was, and it's aligned with the song you wrote, and you're like, wow, that's, you know, as opposed to somebody, you know, like Bruce Springsteen and George Bush.
Nailed it. That's it. Like, yeah, it's been twofold experience. Like, I've had someone, so if, again, for those eyes, someone's like, oh my God, what a beautiful song. Like, what a beautiful love song. And I'm in my brain, I'm like, it's not, it's not a love song. It's a very dark song. I'll tell you more about it after, but
yeah.
And I found that as I get older, I'm not as bothered if people misunderstand my intent. When I was younger, I would get furious that like, how could you not understand it? It's plain as day in the lyrics. And
yeah,
but it's like, everyone's going to bring their own thing.
Yeah. They're going to bring their own emotion and their own memory and their own, you know, whether we call it a bias or programming, to it. But I think it's sort of like famous how so many people misunderstand music, right? Like, they miss, you know, that's what we always hear about, is how people even like sometimes get the words wrong. And I can't remember what song it was right now, but I remember James Corden and Chris Martin are doing a carpool karaoke.
I love those.
And James Corden gets one of the lyrics wrong, and Chris Martin just kind of looks at him and goes, no, go ahead. What is it? Right. And they have a good chuckle on it, but you know, so yeah, you always hear about them getting it wrong. And so I just was curious about the moments when somebody like really connects and you're like, yes, that's incredible.
There's been a few interviews I've done where the interviewer has clearly really listened to the lyrics of the song and broken it down and nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
Even for a few songs that I thought were very, what's the word for it? Like,
just obscure.
Yeah. Obscure, like covered in metaphor, you know, like, and they nailed it. And it, you know what? It's a great feeling because you realize that there's a lot of people like you. Right. On this planet, and that you connected.
Welcome back. I'm talking with songwriter and musician Dan Dowoskin from The Honey Runners about being a father, Billie Eilish, and how when it comes to art, it's never finished. It's always abandoned. So you mentioned that, like, genres and different parts of your life, you know, you have different, you know, we move through different, like, movies and stories and books and genres. And you said the same thing sort of happens with what you find joy in, you know, in these moments of joy. And so how has that changed as you've gotten older? Has you become a father? Have you found your sort of optic change, or do you see it change, or do you even notice it change?
Do you mean like my approach to joy chasing?
Well, you said, if I understood you right, you said sort of like, as just like genres and things change, like our favorite music might change as we go through life. We might love country at one moment, and then we get into folk, and then we're into something else. You kind of inferred that about, you know, that what you're tapping into can be something slightly different. So, you know, and I don't want to put words in your mouth to guess what that was. And so I was wondering if you've noticed in the last few years, have the way that you see the world changed now that you're a father?
Totally.
In the way that you write your music.
People tell you that when you have a kid, you completely you have to surrender yourself, yeah, right? Yeah. Which has become very true. And it's been a fight for me to have a very big personality. I have a very big ego sometimes. And I have a hard time letting go. But when I have someone like my daughter, Hannah, who is now 4, she makes it easier because you go through moments with her where it's all about her and you're okay with that. You have no problem with that. I find that that's paralleled in the music that I write because it's hard with this album, with Everything's on Fire, because there are a lot of me songs, but I've definitely shifted from love songs about myself. I much prefer, or at least I'm chasing songs about other things now. I'm trying to find more depth in experiences. I'm trying to write about things that aren't at all in my wheelhouse.
Right.
Like tell stories that are not at all about me. And I love it. There's a book behind you on the shelf right now called Songwriters on Songwriting. A good friend of mine, our guitar player, Connor Gaines, lent it to me. And it really hits the nail on the head with different people's approaches to this whole thing. And like when you listen to the Beatles, one of the reasons people love the Beatles, especially women, a lot of their songs, if you read it, it's like you, my, we.
Right.
It's like really inclusive. So, they really wanted to have the person listening feel as if the song was written about them.
Mm-hmm. With the birth of a child, for me, the experience was, it's kind of like the blinders get taken off and you start to see things in the world that you never noticed before. And for some of us, it's danger, right? Like you take that newborn baby out onto the street and you walk down the sidewalk and all of a sudden you realize, wow, those cars are really going fast, right? And you never just notice
yelling
that
at everyone. That first drive home from the hospital. Oh my God.
You know, so you see the world differently because you're forced to become more aware of the environment, more aware of different things. And because they're seeing the world differently, like children force you to then also see the world from their perspective and what they're seeing. And so it just opens you up so much. So it's interesting how you describe that it's affected, like that experience and how it's affecting your songwriting. Here's a kind of loaded question for you. Do you have a musical hero or heroes?
My heroes are songwriters of songs that I obsess over.
So what, give me those songs, or a couple of those songs. Give me an example.
I have a full playlist of them. Billie Eilish.
Right.
Billie Eilish, in a world that is like just mad, like the times right now, this like, you know, I think she's probably like 20 now or 21, but like at 17 writes a very unabashed album that is original and clever and cool and sexy and like dangerous, and with the videos to match and the personality. And can we swear on this? Doesn't give a fuck about everything else that's happening or the criticism or whatever. And God, the world needs more of that. When creative voices are restricted, that's the worst. Like when people can't just be themselves, because that's where the authenticity comes from. Sometimes songs just nail me to the wall. Like, and Billie Eilish had one called When the Party's Over.
Right.
Ooh, it got me through some hard, hard stuff I was going through. And I listened to that song probably 4 times a day for 3 months straight.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you listen to that song, just the way it's been produced, the way it's been sang, written, all of it. So like for me, the excitement in like meeting someone like Billy is like I've literally spent 3 months 4 times a day with her whispering in my ears. That's a very heavy connection to somebody that you know nothing about, that you don't know at all. You maybe like, I mean, I dig after something, after I hear a song like that, I dig to know more about the person. I go online and I look up their history and their catalog, and I dive into the full album. And but like, there's a lot more weight to it than people think. And so when I get into a room with someone like that, I get nervous because they have no idea who I am, but I know a lot about them now.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
That's what a good song does.
You and I were having a conversation about songs that sort of take a long time to kind of find their feet, you know, and I think you called them orphans or something like that. Like they, you think they're going to be on an album, but they don't quite make it, or they don't get finished, and they get, you know, like writers always talk about it, like, oh, the book's in the bottom of the drawer. And then I took it out 15 years later and finished it, and it became a bestseller and this sort of story. But do you have any songs like that that have hung around for years and years and years waiting to kind of get finished?
Yeah, I've got one now that's 4 years in the making.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I just can't. It's called Ready, Fire, Aim. And I just can't. It's just not sitting right. I was thinking about an expression for you I heard. It was a quote from, I don't know who, said, art is never finished, it's abandoned.
Oh, you know who's, so
I don't know, right? It just rings so true. I know so many people who they'd never know when to put a final stamp on something. I have that problem sometimes, but usually I look at it and I go, yeah, it's there. Like, we got it to its end zone. There's a pet peeve of mine that I think it takes a lot of maturity to revisit something you've created and reformat it after a few years, because you now have a different perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it better because you've probably learned a lot, and you know, since you finished that book, or you finished the song, or you finished the painting.
So that's a good point where you talked about, you know, like we were talking about like orphan songs or songs that kind of like take forever to be born, and your process of songwriting, which is like you tap into an emotion from a time in the past, and the struggle of having to have that happen. So, you know, you're having to fight with the desire, hey, I want to finish this song, but I can't get to where I need to go. I can't connect anymore, or I can't connect yet. And so therefore you wait. What's that feeling when it happened?
That's a good feeling.
Do you have any on this album?
So the ones on this album, they did come out fully formed, but it was wrestling with them in production was the hard part. I find some of the best songs that I've ever written come out in like 10 minutes. Like, it's just that it's a very overwhelming feeling, and it floors you, and you're trying to get it down almost like you're almost scared that the whatever spark hit you is going to leave you, and you have to get it down now because you know that it's special. I think that's what separates good artists, I think, from people who just aren't that creative, is that you have a yearning feeling to get this down now because it means something. It might be crap. It might not mean something to you tomorrow. But the fact that you like took 10 minutes to put these thoughts down is the difference between someone who does this for a living and, you know, someone who's never going to show anyone their art.
Right.
I think.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know when it's coming that it's good. Like, this is important. Not that it's good, but that it's important.
That's the that's the ego part. That's the art. That's the part I think you have to celebrate your own intuition and just stop getting in your own way and let it come out. You know, if you're second guessing the muse, well, the muse is feeding you something, like Forget it. You've ruined it. You've ruined that moment. That's one of my favorite feelings, especially with in a collaborative environment.
Mm.
When something like that comes together, there's a very tangible feeling of like, we are creating something here that has something special in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? And this part is the creative process. Yes, you in 8 days, you will all come back to the cutting room floor and be like, it was okay. But like, you were all there that day. You all felt what it was. Same with if you're on your own and you just get something down.
Yeah.
Because what happens, I saw that there was a cartoon on like an Instagram that someone made about the creative process. And it shows you like all the stages of like spark, creation, and then like self-doubt, pity, loathing, blah, blah, blah. Upswing, and then back down again. Yeah. It was just like, it just described the process so well.
Well, and I mean, and I think that that's the part where I'm fascinated, being on the outside of songwriting, to be looking in and go, yeah, like how do you move through all of those stages, right? Like, and not give up.
With grace and patience.
Welcome back. I'm talking with songwriter and musician Dan Dowouskin of the Honey Runners about advice for young songwriters and the significance of being the proverbial mirror to the audience. I mean, I think you've already given me this answer, but I just want to ask it again. Tips to others on how you can keep yourself maybe more open to that source?
I think I like the Wild West thing where it's like there's no rules. The reason songwriting is so intriguing is that no one knows the point from A to B. It's different for every single person. Rick Rubin does it. He talks about it really well. He's a producer. He's a famous producer. Yeah. Just done Beastie Boys, AC/DC, I don't know, everyone, Johnny Cash. And his approach to the creative process is like helping someone be the best version of themselves and allowing that to come through in the art. And that's how you get the goods. My approach for when I meet like a young songwriter is to go through to sit, because they're like, let's write a song together, and then you end up writing most of the song because they get really shy, and I don't want that. Like, I want to hear what their voice is. What are you feeling right now? With the common grain for people who separate between calling themselves creative or calling themselves an artist or having imagination is their ability to tap into that and not be shy of it. Whereas someone who tells you they don't have a creative bone in their body, it's probably because they're not as sensitive to certain things,
right,
as others. That's genes. That's part of who you grew up as, some from your parents, who your parents allowed you to be. My parents were they allowed me for a lot of room for creative self-expression. And that's the biggest gift you can give to your kid is the space to create, the space to self-explore, to not be shy at all about being weird and doing weird things. And like, because let's face it, right? Like, musicians are weird, and that's why people love them.
Yeah.
They're outliers. They're strange beings. They don't feel like they're of the earth. And a lot of them had very similar upbringings and like people who, encouragement, that's a big one. Because a kid who's doing this, they're their own worst critic.
Right.
Every time you have a conversation with someone who's new to creating, and they'll always preface showing you something by saying, I just did this and don't judge it. And
it's not good.
It's not ready and it's not very good at all. And I sit there and I'm thinking, I know like you're 14. Like you're just starting this journey. I'm 36 and I am my own worst critic. For sure. I've learned to be a bit gentler on myself as I'm creating and let the critic come out once something is out.
Right.
Because if you stifle that process, forget it. You're never going to create anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to allowing yourself to just make it exist, right? Like it's in your head and you want it out, but you're going to criticize it as it comes out, as opposed to, you know, just get it out. And once it's out, you can stop and look at it and then decide whether or not it's something you want to do something else with, or, you know, you never have to do anything with it if you don't want to, but you need to get it out. And I think that so many people who say, quote unquote, I'm not creative, they just don't even, like, they don't compare those, like, they don't even understand, because of course they are. Everybody's creative. There isn't a human being on this earth who's not creating. They just don't know that they're creating.
Yeah, they haven't allowed themselves to tap into that because it's just not a part of their life. But it's just like a creative person who never flexes a business muscle.
Right.
Right?
But the thing that I found sort of interesting about when you were talking about, you know, being a musician and it being kind of odd and people, you know, that's why people like watching musicians up on stage and stuff. It's, I remember years and years ago when I was in the restaurant business and I had this one guy give me some very wise information, and he said, everybody cooks to some degree, whether it's mac and cheese or French cuisine, everybody cooks food. And so they're a critic about food because they know how to do it. And they can go like, this food's good, this food's not good. And so he said to me, just know when a customer's complaining about something that they are 100% right, because they have an experience of doing it and they know, hey, I know how to cook, and therefore, so you're never going to convince them, kind of thing. Even though they might be wrong, you're never going to convince them because they're coming from a place of, I do this too, and therefore I know this isn't good. And so when I used to do improv theater as a hobby, and the thing that I learned from that was that people laugh when they see somebody up on stage doing something that they would be petrified to do on their own, right? So if somebody gets up and does something kind of goofy or funny or says something on stage in a skit, people will burst out laughing because they, part of it is just the attention of them going, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that. Like, I can't believe they're up there doing that. And so I wonder if, like, with seeing that musician, I mean, music's universal. I mean, you know, it could be why we're even here, right? And then there's these people who get to do it. And so you're looking at them and you're just like, oh my God, that is so cool. Like, how do they get to do that?
I guess the magic of probably, I'd say performance art as opposed to just like all art, is that they're the proverbial mirror to the audience, and that I found that a lot in my experience in music, and I find that good music, really, like the great musicians are the ones who really understand this notion that they are purely a reflection of their audience, and that when you play a show, the feeling, when you watch, when you're in the audience and you watch a very amateur musician play and they're very nervous, mm-hmm. and they're not that good, it makes the crowd very uncomfortable.
Right.
Unless obviously it's like friends of the artist and they're very supportive, but the reason for the discomfort is the audience is genuinely feeling what that artist is feeling on stage. And it makes the audience member feel a lack of confidence. And there's chemistry that's happening there. And when you watch someone who is just pure magic and they clearly have a firm grasp on what it means to be human, what it means to be a musician, you know, what it means to be a creator, and they're playing for an audience member, it's the same thing. The audience member is empowered. and they leave that venue feeling like, you know, maybe I'm not a musician, but, and then they translate that confidence into other aspects of their life. And that's a very important feeling in music to me, that sense of connection and reflection of being the mirror and understanding that, that what I do on a stage matters, and like the kind of energy I exude, you know, what that means to people.
Wow, that's really cool. I never thought of it that way, but that's like bang on. Yeah. Cause I'm not great at what's your favorite color, what's your favorite movie. I'm always like
Blue Inception. Yeah.
And so what I've practiced over the years is my answers to some of these things. And one of them is what's the best concert? Oh, I know where this came from. It came from the Brené Brown podcast, because at the end of her podcast, she would always ask her guests these questions. And one of the questions was, what's your favorite concert that you've been to? And I always thought, oh God, what would I answer? What would I answer? And then it hit me and I remembered Bob Seger.
Oh, he's so good.
And it's exactly what you just described. Everybody left. This is back at Maple Leaf Gardens, when Maple Leaf Gardens wasn't a grocery store. And we all, like the double doors opened and everybody walked out onto Carlton Street and headed towards the subway. And everybody was singing the last song that he performed. And it was because he was the ultimate performer. And I had no idea he was. I mean, I grew up listening to his music. I knew he was, you know, I loved his music, but I'd never seen him live before. And you walked out of there and you were just like on another planet from the energy and the confidence that he had. You'll leave those experiences and you're just a different person because you were there. Yeah. So it's interesting how you tied that together. Thank you. Well, Dan, I've taken up a ton of your time, but I've really enjoyed chatting with you and learning your perspective on creativity and your art form. It's so refreshing to hear. So thank you for your time. If people wanted to get in touch with you, people want to listen to your music, how, where, is there a website, a social media channel?
I would just say don't bother. Don't write me. Don't at me. You can, no, they can, everything of ours lives up on honeyrunners.com. All of our socials are at honeyrunners. It's right. Very simple. You can,
oh yeah.
It's a good band name because it was actually somewhat original and it made it easy to find us. If you can remember, honeyrunners.
Yeah. So
one word.
Yeah. I'm going to do the podcast thing and spell it out for people. It's HONEYRUNNERS.com. And your new album, Everything Is On Fire, is on fire, which is great.
On fire. We're on the radio in England. We're on the radio right now in the Netherlands.
Oh, that's so cool.
Like Belgium and Denmark and Germany, and it's cool. It feels really good. The US, Canada, like, it feels good to know that people are hearing these songs.
Yeah.
Across the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a very interesting album release. I've been proud of the stuff we've made so far, but this one by far exceeds a lot of the art we've made in the past. We put a lot of work into this.
Yeah, and you had the extra time, right? Because
no kidding.
It wasn't like you were touring or anything. That's the beauty of this time, right? Is that it's given us all. But yeah, that whole world thing is just so fascinating, because I had a guy reach out to me from Greece. I believe it was the island of Corfu, and he was asking me something completely different about the podcast, but then in a correspondence, he got back to me and he said, oh, you know, I just want to let you know that, and he quoted something that I had said in my podcast, and he basically inferred that it's kind of changed his perspective on life. And you just go like, whoa, you know, it's just like, it just sort of, those moments are just priceless, right? And so the whole concept of your stuff is out there being played on radio stations in all of these countries. And like right now, somebody's probably listening to it.
Hopefully.
You know, isn't that wild?
It is wild.
Yeah.
You get that. That's, and the funny thing with artists, you get, you know, 40 great messages like your music changed me. And then you get one that's like your music shit. And that one comment just destroys creative people. But it's good to know people listen. That's all you can ask for these days with the amount of media that's out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I overheard, I don't know if it was, it might have been Joe Rogan or somebody like that. And they were just saying, you know, like if there's 100 people and they make comments, 10 of them are giving you negative comments. And those people are probably always giving negative comments everywhere they go. And so there's nothing that you should take personally from it. And you should listen to the 90 other people who aren't necessarily constantly giving out positive compliments, right?
I say listen to it all. Like, give me negativity or positivity. Just don't give me apathy.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to thank you again for your time. It was great talking to you, and I loved learning about your creative process. That was really inspiring, and I can't wait to see where you go next. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. Well, that's another episode of Listen In. Thanks for being. Please subscribe, leave comments, or head on over to our website at listeninpod.com. That's listen with two N's, pod.com, where you'll find episode notes, links to anything that we talked about in this episode, and you can connect with us about being a guest on Listen In.